We knew the economy was going to turn at some point, but you never really can be prepared for timing or speed of change.
I hope this cycle we're in doesn't take us back to the days of regulatory purgatory, where everything we did had consequences.
As the world continues to change, we have found out we need to be even more nimble as we move forward.
By requiring things like business continuity planning and pandemic plans, we need to think proactively about what we need to do in the future.
We better grab our helmets and start getting prepared today.
Banking is a risk business, but in today's environment, we are being faced with uncertain times. Financial institutions have always had partners who could help evaluate, address, and mitigate risk, but today they need to lean on those partners more than ever. Welcome to Bank on Whitfley. Each episode will feature discussions around industry issues, hot topics, and current trends, giving you an insider's look at how top performers and professionals are staying ahead of the curve. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Bank on Whitfley. My name is Mike Vessel, and I'm a partner in our financial services practice area and the host of Bank on Whitfley. Today's podcast is about current compensation trends and considerations. The new normal we have today has resulted in some significant changes in how people are compensated, as well as expectations around work arrangements. Whitfley's just completed its annual compensation survey, and we'll talk a little bit about the trends we're seeing, some of which are impacted by the pandemic and related recession, and some that aren't. Pleased to have Julia Johnson with us today. Julia is the director in the Organizational Performance Group here at Whitfley. Julia works with many organizations with a specialization in financial services around human resource and organizational development topics. She has over 25 years of experience and is nationally known for engaging and entertaining presentations on HR issues. Julia is an integral part of the annual compensation survey that we do with our financial institution's client, and thus is well-versed in compensation and other HR-related issues. Welcome, Julia.
Thanks, Mike. Look forward to our conversation today.
As do I. Julia, let's start off talking about some of the non-compensation issues out there today. We know that the pandemic, recession, and so on, and some things around how we work, how we compensate employees and associates have changed significantly, as I noted. We've talked about remote work and rotation of teams in the past, so let's not regurgitate that. But let's talk about what new things are you seeing in the environment today?
Yeah, great question. And one of the hotter topics, if you will, Mike, right now are PTO balances or the paid time off, whether it be PTO, vacation, sick leave, whatever those balances are. What we're finding due to the pandemic, that many employees did not take as much PTO as they normally would. They were at home and felt they didn't need to take PTO. Where would they go anyway? They were confined at stay-at-home orders and the whole nine yards. So those balances are higher. So as the year draws to a close, many banks are evaluating the best path forward. Not every bank is choosing the same path. There's not one good path. So some banks are going to continue to send reminders to their team. Part of those reminders during the summer months to utilize PTO, and particularly for those who have a use it or lose it policy, or those who have a minimal carryover into the next year. Some are already planning on paying out the balances so that when the employees come into 2021, they're starting with their fresh buckets and are not increasing the amount of time available to them to take off. But we all know that increases this because you're increasing the level of compensation paid to employees. Some are doing a hybrid. Some are paying out to a max of X number of hours for 2020, and the rest of the hours are being allowed to carry over. Some are allowing when situations exist where perhaps a bank has a self-funded short-term disability policy or what's called an extended sick leave program. Perhaps they'll let them take some of those hours and donate it to that program as well for future use. I've also heard some discussion, but I've not yet seen it, where banks may allow employees to select a charity of choice, and the bank will contribute the value of the PTO in whole or in part to that charitable organization. So I know there's some discussion around that, but nothing that has really come to fruition. When I think of PTO and I think of employees, I think of emotion. So in my mind's eye and my advice to everybody is do the best to your ability to keep your employees whole. When there's a sense of loss, people can get angry, they can get hurt, they can get disenfranchised. And today is not the day to do that for your employees, because I think that will have an impact on the future, on what I'm going to call the employment shuffle. We experienced the employment shuffle back in coming out of the recession of 2008 in that 2010-11 timeframe, where people felt that perhaps they weren't treated respectfully or fairly. Maybe they lost 401k contributions. Maybe they lost some of their PTO. So when the environment shifted, people packed their bags and moved to a new employment opportunity. So when looking at PTO, consider not only the impact on today, but what that can do for you in the future.
Great. Julie, one of the areas that we've seen different work arrangements is really for frontline employees. I assume the compensation arrangements that you see for frontline employees is different as well. Tell us about what you're seeing related to that compensation for that group. Is there premium pay for those frontline employees? And if there is some sort of premium pay or other additional compensation, what do you think about what's going to happen to that if and when we get back to a new normal?
There is pay in the market today. And again, like with PTO, no two banks necessarily are doing it the same. So some banks are certainly paying premium pay. Some are calling it hazard pay or pandemic pay, and generally reserved for those frontline hourly employees who have that direct contact with customers or are working in fairly close proximity with one another. Some may extend it to officer positions, but generally they would also have to be in the bank on a frequent and recurring basis and also in that frontline capacity of serving customers. You referenced our survey, and there was a question that we asked on the pandemic and asked how many of those banks that we surveyed were extending premium pay, and only about 14% indicated that they were. In my conversations, I think that's likely a bit higher, but again, I could be mistaken on that, and I think our survey does a good job of representing what's happening in the market. And when they're paying that premium pay, it's generally represented as a differential, not specifically being built into that hourly rate. So I think that's important to recognize as well. I'm also seeing that in some organizations, they may take a different approach. So where some may add that differential to that hourly rate, some may look at a monthly bonus. Still others are holding off to year end to identify what pool of dollars might be available for those frontline employees and really evaluating what positions went above and beyond during this challenging time. And at that point, make that award. So a lot of different approaches that are occurring today. With respect to whether or not I anticipate that to continue in the future, I do. I do expect it to continue into the future. There is one thing that I think can be safely said, and once you give pay to an individual for the work that they perform, if it is the same work, even though it's in a slightly different environment or a slightly different context because of COVID, it's really difficult to take it back. So, and some banks are finding that maybe, just maybe, they can operate and serve customers well and achieve those productivities with fewer employees that might be higher paid. So I think as things continue to unfold, we're going to take a step back as an organization and evaluate what's in the best interest of our employees and what's in the best interest of the bank and how do we continue to be excellent customer service providers to those in our community. So I think it's really challenging to pull it back. I think it will continue. And this is the very issue as to why some banks may not elect to utilize premium pay, because it's going to be hard to pull it back. There's another element, too, that I think is important to put on the table when we talk about that premium pay concept. Many of our community banks are so generous and they work hard to keep their employees whole. So prior to the enactment of that emergency paid sick leave, we had a number of banks that created their own additional sick leave that was available to employees. And then lo and behold, the EPSL, Emergency Paid Sick Act, was enacted. And yet the banks continued to keep the employees whole, even if and when that EPSL was exhausted by that additional bank. Many of them did not require their employees to use their own PTO or sick leave, which also contributed to those larger balances. And in the conversations that I'm having, this is likely something, Mike, that won't continue in 2021. I think if those banks allow carryover into the next year, it might be to offset what we anticipate to be a difficult year for COVID. We know that there's some projections that COVID will continue through 2020, certainly into 2021. I don't know if you're hearing it, but it looks like they're projecting into 2022 as well. So they can't keep on with that level of generosity, but they're going to work with their systems, it sounds like, to carry things over to make sure that people can have that pay continuity and to rely on that. at the end, it really depends upon the culture and the philosophy of the bank and how they want to proceed.
So we talked about the frontline employees, but you know, institutions have been really busy above and beyond frontline employees as well with PPP loans, mortgage refinancing, and you know, on and on. Mm-hmm. Has this also had an impact on short-term compensation for employees, Julia? And you know, do you see that also changing back to normal at a later point in time?
Yeah, I definitely see that level of work circling, you know, coming back and swinging back to mid-level. I mean, I think it would be challenging to keep that level and pace up moving forward. I think 2021, I'm not an economist in any sense of the mean. I just have a sense it's going to slow down. Everything that accelerates has a tendency to slow down. During those really pressing weeks where employees were working excess of those 40 hours, I was in conversations with some of our clients and their loan processing team, their mortgage lenders. They were working 50, 60-hour work weeks just to keep up. So when we're looking at those hourly folks, they're also oftentimes getting that premium pay. But we have to keep in our mind's eye, they get the premium pay and then they get premium pay. Premium pay in the form, the second premium pay in the form of overtime, 1.5 times that regular rate. So the banks are acknowledging when we have them working that 50, 60-hour work week, we're also pulling them away from their families and potentially increasing their childcare. So they're still looking for those opportunities through perhaps some premium pay if that's available at the organization, as well as some periodic, whether it's called a spot award or a recognition for those extra hours. I worked with one client, I just made me smile. The CEO was recognizing just how hard her team was working. So she not only provided a financial award, she created a basket. And while with the pandemic, she could not go into their homes, she delivered the basket as a personal thank you to the individuals that were working hard and delivered not only an extra compensation, but a small gift that accompanied it as well, which just turned up the specialness of it for her team. So I thought that was really, really interesting approach for a CEO to do.
Great. So let's shift gears just a little bit. You know, we've always had a challenging talent market for qualified talent. Has that competition for qualified talent increased or stayed the same through the course of this? And what impact is that having on wages?
I think despite the fact that we have so many unemployed individuals today, it is still a very competitive market for qualified talent. And as a result of some of the actions taken, prior to 7/31, when we had the federal unemployment of $600 per week in addition to the state unemployment, what we found is that banks had to increase their starting wage just even to compete with the unemployment, because people at that time were even more apprehensive and a little anxious about coming into organizations with COVID being unknown. And I think we increase those wages, and once they're increased, I doubt they're ever swinging back. And not only that, what happens, Mike, is we end up with something called compression. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Let's just use that $600 a week unemployment, federal unemployment. So that equated to $15 an hour. And we know that there's been some discussion in recent years about increasing that minimum wage to $15 per hour. So there might have been, political intention to create some steerage and some opportunity to let employers know that this might be an expectation for minimum wage moving forward, or you may need to meet this or beat this for employees to entice them to come to work. So that compression occurs when I hire a new employee and I'm paying that new employee $15, and yet my current employee, my internal employees, let's say, are making $14 an hour. So at some juncture, shocking though it may be, these employees will talk. Somewhere along the way, the internal employee, the current employee, is going to recognize that the new employee is making $2,080, assuming a straight 40 work week, more per year than what they are. So the bank comes into that tough decision. What am I going to do to address and resolve the issue? Am I going to let it ride and just recognize compression, or am I going to resolve the compression? If I let it ride, we're reinforcing a message, unfortunately, that employees are often worth more on the external market than in their own organization. And when I talk about that employment shuffle, that could occur if and when an opportunity comes up and the employee sees it, whether that be today or in the future as maybe concerns lessen. So the compression, I think, is a significant issue, and the competition for talent is going to continue.
So, Julia, we're probably getting into that time of year when institutions are starting to think about budgeting. What do you think is going to happen with salary budgets for next year?
Mm-hmm. We do, as you know, a ton of work in compensation, and as such, we keep our thumb on the pulse of any number of survey houses, as they're called, and Society for Human Resource Management, World at Work, and others who evaluate and keep their energy focused on what's happening today and what's projected to happen tomorrow. So in looking at those projections, surprisingly, it looks as if the merit increase pool is going to hold fairly steady for 2021. I'm seeing right around that 2.9-3% once again, and that's reflective of what it was last year and some prior years. Now, having said that, in conversations, as you know, we have human resource business forums and we have like-minded HR professionals coming together. And gosh, I think we have about 150 that come together now. And we try to compare notes to see what everyone is thinking about to keep the thumb on the pulse. And they too are thinking right around that 3%, 3.5%. A few organizations indicated that they might be looking at 4%, but I don't know if or in awareness that they may be lagging market a little bit, and maybe that is not only merit, but a bit of a market adjustment. But all in all, I would say right around that 3% is a good target. We will see that oftentimes executives might be a little ahead of that amount, so that potentially 4-5% for that executive level, but in total, probably hovering around 3%.
So are those base increases that you're talking about, the percentages, those would be irrespective of premium pay or bonuses for, frontline employees or for being really busy. Is that correct?
Correct. That would be on that base hourly wage or that base salary exclusive of any premium.
Okay, great. Thanks. So let's move on to executive compensation, which is a topic that I think everybody likes to hear about. Wifley's salary survey that I alluded to in the introduction, focuses to a large degree on those executive comp and benefits. One thing I noticed in my review of the survey was that there were several categories where median base pay seemed to drop in 2020 compared to 2019. In particular, I noticed the CEO, the CFO, the Chief Human Resource Officer categories dropped for all size banks, but other positions dropped in several other bank size ranges. And given the fact that you're talking about continued increases in the last discussion that we had, is this a factor in that survey of the fact that we may have different participants, or maybe there's some newer, lower paid people given the boomers retiring, in significant numbers and so on? What do you think caused that drop this year?
When we take a look at, survey data, oftentimes people want it to be absolutely representative of the market. And I always look at survey data as guidelines and giving me an understanding and impression of what's happening in the market. And as a result of conducting a survey, some organizations, some banks will say, we are going to participate every year. And for those of you who are listening and do that, thank you. That helps us track trends more efficiently and more effectively a year over year. Some of our clients choose to participate every other year, which is also fantastic. Some may say every third year, thankfully those are fewer and fewer because everybody wants to know what's happening. But in those years where we have different composition of banks, that may have some impact in terms of what those numbers might be. But to your point, with the baby boomer, we also have a significant number of baby boomers who are slipping into retirement. And as a result, we have newer people coming into the roles and they're not as advanced or as experienced in their position. So those compensation levels might be, the base compensation levels will be lower. And given that incentive often a percentage of base, total compensation as a result will be lower. I would expect those numbers to continue to fluctuate a little bit until there's that clearer transition of baby boomers out and that next leadership in. And then I think we'll see another continuing increase in those executive wages.
So are you seeing any other trends? I mean, obviously that was a trend that I saw and it may not really be a trend, but are there other trends that you're seeing in executive comp?
In the past, we would see comp elements that would have your base, your annual, potentially a midterm incentive, which might be a three-year incentive tied to your strategic plan, or a long-term deferred compensation. And long-term is relative to these days, depending on the generation that you're speaking with. It could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be 15 years. What we're finding is that where it was previously reserved for the CEO, let's say, or maybe the right hand and the left hand of his executive team, we're finding those opportunities to go broader and perhaps a little deeper into the organization in an effort to recognize, reward, and retain talent. A key initiative right now for many is to ward off the siphoning of talent by their competitors. So it's going a bit broader and a little bit deeper.
Julia, one of the things that I also noticed in the survey is that about a third of the banks in our survey are family-owned. Do you think that impacts the overall compensation comparisons? And if so, how?
Yeah, that's a great question. My mind goes in a couple of different ways, but let me take path one first, and hopefully I'll remember path two. So path one is, I think a family-owned organization needs to be competitive within the market. The composition mix might be a bit different. So if you have a CEO and you don't have stock available, you might find that the mix leans a little heavier on base, or maybe their annual incentive compensation opportunities are a bit greater, and or the deferred compensation piece looks different, whether it's phantom stock or cash deferred. Now, if the CEO happens to be a family member and is representing the family, I strongly encourage that base compensation reflective of market. Now, you might not want to lead the market in that particular regard, and then the compensation mix might be different. Perhaps they're not extending annual incentive or some of the other components because they're taking some of their benefit out of the dividends that would be paid on the success of the organization as an owner. But all in all, regardless of the level of position, I'm a strong advocate for making sure that the compensation of executives is fair and competitive within the market, so that if you were ever to need to find a replacement for an individual, you're competitive in the market and you know what that is going to take. And there is a tremendous amount of competition for talent. So if it's a non-family member, it's going to need to mirror the market. And if you are a family member, I still want to make sure that people are effectively and appropriately compensated for the work that's being performed as a representative of the family.
So one of the things that I think we see with a lot of the family-owned banks as well as is that they are S-corps. Mm-hmm. And so that can impact, I think, the amount of compensation that they may be taking, especially if there's limited family ownership, if you've got one owner or something like that, correct? Any comments or thoughts on that?
I would anticipate so, Mike. I'm not an expert in the S-corp, C-corp type of world, so I would probably hold back from talking about that. But absolutely, those factors all come into play when determining what's the best mix for payout.
I think the biggest comment that I took away from that discussion on the family-owned banks, Julia, is to keep compensation somewhat comparable so that you're not surprised. And we do see, even in non-family-owned banks, surprise when they have to bring a new CEO in as to what the cost of that could be. So I think that's a very valid point. Let's shift gears just a little bit, because our survey does also include some information related to board members. It's not just the C-suite. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've learned about board compensation and benefits from this year's survey?
Board compensation has increased a bit. I'm definitely continuing to see increases in recognition for board meetings and retainers that are being paid for paid to the board members. I think we always need to understand and recognize the governance and oversight that our board members provide to our organizations, and we want to recognize that in an appropriate way. So when looking at an organization, say, Mike, less than $100 million or so, those board fees are a bit smaller. You might be approximating, $750, et cetera, as the organization per meeting. So as the organization grows, we're also seeing that the board compensation might grow. So we're seeing $1,000, $1,200, in addition to some base wages, in terms of that retainer that would be payable to the board members. Because we do want to recognize the risk that they assume being a board member and the accountabilities that they have, and to pay them fairly and competitively within the market. I think it's important to do that.
And I do think that we also need to be aware that some of those numbers need to be differentiated, because public companies seem to pay significantly more. And obviously, there's probably a fair amount more risk with a public company, public company board member as well. So
exactly.
Good. So, Julia, we're kind of getting toward the end of our time here. Any key takeaways that you want to leave with us?
I think the key takeaway, despite the fact that we are in a situation that is unprecedented. It's had some significant impact on our economy. It's had significant impact on our organizations. I do encourage you to keep your thumb on the pulse of what is happening with compensation. Compensation is and will continue to be emotional. Employees rely upon us as good corporate citizens, as members, contributing members of our community, to represent and understand what the competitive market is for pay and to pay people fairly. And I think community banking is known for caring and compassion of their community and their employees. And this is just an excellent way to continue to demonstrate that your culture is to ensure that your employees are fairly and equitably treated internally and in the market. Just builds faith and confidence in your organization.
Good. Well, thanks, Julia. I know that the time for participating in the survey is obviously over because we've essentially gathered all the information and are publishing that. But is there a way that people may be interested in getting a copy can do so? And do you know what the cost is?
Sure. If anyone is interested in purchasing a copy, you can reach out to Mary Bortz. She's our survey manager. I think a phone call is likely best. She can be reached at 715-858-6677 or mbortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z, at whipfley.com. Or reach out to me directly as well, Julia Johnson. Certainly love to hear from you all. For non-participants, the cost of that survey is $750. For those of you who have participated and would like to purchase that, it's $285. And both of those would have tax added to that, Mike.
Great. And hopefully some of those that maybe have heard about this that didn't participate in the past can consider next August or so. I think we'll be sending out the survey again, July or August. And so look for that. And hopefully you'll be able to participate as well. So, Julia, thank you very much. Appreciate you sharing your observations about compensation and a little bit about our salary survey today. Certainly appreciate your time and hope that the people who are listening today learn more about where the industry is sitting related to compensation and benefits. Like to, again, suggest to everybody that they visit our website for more information on this and other topics. Till next time, this has been a Bank on Whipfley podcast.
You've been listening to Bank on Whipfley. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune into the next episode as we feature insights from other leaders in the financial industry and even more ways you can stay ahead of the curve.